Ladies and gentlemen, I call this budget work session meeting for the Fluvana County Board of Supervisors to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Boy, that's confusing.
Thank you very much. You're right, Mr. Weaver. I was sitting down, I was like, Mr. O'Brien, you're about a second and a half delay. So it was like we were trying to talk to each other at the same time.
Okay. Is that 2 seconds there?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
No worries. All right. We'll begin with C, the nonprofit presentations. First up is the Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development.
Hey, Nellie Coffin, President of Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development. Just want to make sure everybody can hear me.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Next slide, please. Yep. Thanks, Eric.
Sure.
We were founded in 1995, so we will celebrate our 25th anniversary at our June annual meeting, which is very exciting. We are the regional economic development organization for 8 counties plus the city of Charlottesville, which includes Fluvanna County, and believe strongly that local economic success depends on regional economic success. We're very glad to have Fluvanna County as a member of the partnership and are delighted Eric Dahl, next slide please, sorry Eric, is on our board of directors and is a very active member, and we also work closely with Brian Rothamel, your economic development coordinator. And next slide, I just want to share with you that we are a public-private partnership. In addition to every locality supporting us, we have UVA, 2 community colleges, and about 60 private sector companies, including A.G. Dillard, Central Virginia Electric Co-op, and others that have a presence in Fluvanna County. And next slide. I'm here tonight to really just thank you all for getting involved and supporting us, and share with you some of the things we're doing for the partnership. This just gives you our target industries and also gives you our 3 main areas of work. We work with Brian Rothamel on all our leads and inquiries we get, so Fluvanna County sees all of those and has a chance on every opportunity we identify. We were part of your team and worked with Brian to support the attraction of Silk City Printing very recently. And importantly, with COVID, we really stepped up to the plate to pull all of our partners together. Through August, we hosted bi-weekly joint partner roundtables with our economic development partners like Brian, Central Virginia Small Business Development Center, and 6 chambers of commerce, including the Louisa County Chamber, to try to share information, best practices, and do everything we can to help everyone respond and recover from COVID. Rather than monthly meetings, which we've historically had, we still are having weekly meetings with our local economic developers. And again, I think that's been a way for them to share information on what they're doing with CARES Act money, who's using Community Investment Collaborative for what grant management, how is it working. And I think it has helped, and Brian could speak to that, has really helped everyone learn kind of who's doing things, how are they doing it innovatively, and what could everyone learn from what folks are doing. We received funding from Go Virginia for a business-driven, that's all right, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Business-driven recovery initiative, workforce recovery initiative, which is off to a strong start, focused on capturing ideas and then coming up with solutions. On the business side, we're bringing together business leaders in 4 of our targeted industries. So all the industries on this slide except for defense and biosciences. We've had a number of those already, and really trying to engage what are the opportunities that businesses have available, and then working with Project Reconnect, a separate Go Virginia grant on the workforce side. You'll hear from Sarah Morton in a minute under her team to try to connect workers to those opportunities. So far, over 300 job opportunities have been identified, which is, I think, a great service that we're able to offer. As an example, for Fluvanna County, we're able to connect Klotner Metals employees who are being laid off with other manufacturers who are hiring, and help that those folks transition to a new employer before they actually lost their jobs. We also fairly recently helped with a job fair that Silk City Printing had, and helped them fill their positions they had available at that time. I look forward to your board meeting tonight, where you'll talk about site development, and I'll be on that call if you need me for anything, but really excited about that. And the next slide just shows you, I encourage folks to look at our website at centralvirginia.org. We do have fact sheets for Susquehanna County. You all have a section on our website. Glad to get your input. Brian's the one that basically tells me what to do on those, and we give him a draft, and he comes back to us with what he'd like to be sure that we're highlighting. In terms of budget, we request 50 cents per capita. You have a slight increase this year to $13,519. And other than that, on the last slide, we just like to say that economic development's a team sport, and working together, we can all have a stronger region. I'm glad to answer any questions and really appreciate your time tonight. And it's a pleasure to go first. I don't always get to go. I'm usually at the end, so thank you all. Whoever did that, I appreciate it.
Are there any questions?
No, I don't
have any. Ms. Eager, Mr. O'Brien? All right, thank you so much for everything that you guys do, and we look forward to working together very well.
All right, thank you.
Next up is the Virginia Career Works Piedmont region.
Good evening, my name is Sarah Morton, the Workforce Director for Virginia Career Works in the Piedmont region. Thank you so much for having us tonight. We're thrilled to be a part of the 11 localities that we serve across this region. Fluvanna is one of our dynamic counties in which we serve. This year, we serve 13,361 people in our one-stop center, which is located in Charlottesville. We have another affiliate in Culpeper and in Orange. Of those 13,000 people, we serve 691 from Fluvanna. And so VCW is positioned to be that convener to build that collaborative partnership for workforce. We want to continue to help mitigate any gaps and barriers that job seekers are facing across our region. We've since partnered with Go Virginia to go after a Project Reconnect grant, which is an economic resilience recovery grant, to help reconnect job seekers who've been impacted with COVID with new employment across our region, specifically those in those labor market industries that's been impacted, which is your hospitality, restaurant management, administrative. So we are really helping to reconnect those individuals with new employment. To date, we have served almost 100 people in that Project Reconnect. So we're really thrilled about what the work that Virginia Career Works is doing to date. We want to continue to centralize and be the hub for all things workforce across the region. So we're really trying to eliminate the saturation of workforce efforts. We're really pleased to announce that Brian Rothmell serves on our workforce board, and we have really benefited by his contributions to serving on our business and industry committee and outreach committee. And so we're really thrilled about his contributions to the scope of work. We do ask for 15 cents per capita to serve the locality in Fluvanna County. And this year we are requesting $4,055 to continue to serve and do the work to help advance our career scope with Virginia Career Works and advance our scope of work for VCW Piedmont. Are there any questions?
No. Okay. Thank you so very much for all y'all do for our county, and appreciate it. Thanks for coming in.
And Supervisor, just
thank you.
And Supervisor, just one thing to remember. So when I present my county administrator's budget in the budget book for all the nonprofits, you'll have what the county's funded for previous years, what they actually requested this year in their budget request, and then whatever I put forward, and then the board can have deliberations on the budget request from there. So just a little reminder on that.
All right, thank you. Next up is Piedmont Housing Alliance.
Who is Piedmont Housing?
Do we have someone from Piedmont Housing Alliance?
Hi, yes, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm trying to multitask and I'm just coming on here.
There she is.
So, and am I able to control the screen, or do I need to next screen?
For all presenters that are on, just when you want to go to the next screen, just inform me next, and I'll go to the next screen for you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So my name is Kristen Lucas. I'm the Director of Housing Counseling and Economic Opportunity with Piedmont Housing Alliance. And it's my pleasure to talk to you all about our work in Fluvanna County with the Housing Counseling Department in particular, in my role with Piedmont Housing Alliance. Next slide, please. All right, so some of the services that we offer to the residents at or that live in Fluvanna County would include down payment, closing cost loans, first-time home buyer counseling, credit counseling, default foreclosure mortgage counseling, financial coaching, and then perhaps in the future, rental property management. At this time, we don't own or operate any rental properties in Fluvanna County, but we do in Albemarle, Nelson, and the city of Charlottesville. Next slide, please. So some things, some rental programs and then some homeownership programs in particular that folks have taken advantage of and can take advantage of that live in Fluvanna County would be financial literacy classes. We do offer financial literacy classes completely online right now. They're all through Zoom. So as long as somebody has some type of internet connection, they can go ahead and join us in those. Again, we do have affordable project development. I don't think we have anything right now in the pipeline in Fluvanna County, but just generally, that's something that we can offer. For people in Fluvanna County that are looking to purchase a home and need a little bit of help with their down payment, we're an intermediary for the Virginia Individual Development Account Program. It's a matched savings program for homeownership. And then for renters, we have the Rental Unit Accessibility Program through Virginia Housing and the Granting Freedom Program through Virginia Housing, where they can help pay for some of the accessibility costs that somebody might need if they want to stay in their rental home. Next slide, please. So again, my role, I'm the director of the Department of Housing, Counseling, and Economic Opportunity. Next slide, please. And this will go into more detail about what we did over the last fiscal year. One-on-one counseling, we were able to work with 25 clients that lived or live in Fluvanna County. And you can see a breakdown of some of those clients below. So 19 of those clients were pre-purchased, 3 were rental, 2 were default or foreclosure, and 1 was a financial capability client, which basically means that they came to us because they wanted to work on their credit report or maybe their budget. Next slide, please. So group education, again, last year, that was mainly online through Zoom. We had 4 clients who lived in Fluvanna County last year. 3 of them attended a pre-purchase workshop, and then 1 attended a financial literacy workshop. Next slide, please. So with our down payment loan program, we were able to help 2 clients who lived in Fluvanna County, or maybe they were moving to Fluvanna County. So one purchased a home in Fluvanna County, and we helped them with $17,751. And then another client from Albemarle purchased a home in Fluvanna County, and we helped them with a down payment loan of $16,640. Next slide, please. Oh, that's all my slides.
No.
Sped through it. Any questions for me, I guess?
When you say you helped someone, it's $17,751. Does that mean you paid the whole amount?
So we provided a down payment loan to that client, and it could have been 2 different loans. At that amount, it was probably just 1 loan, and the loan was $17,700, however many dollars that was.
Okay, thank you.
Do you partner with Habitat and Fluvanna Louise and Housing?
I think I have a pretty good working relationship with Lindell Chavez in particular, yes. With the Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation. I'm able to refer clients to her, she's able to refer clients to me. And then for just the Habitat affiliates in our area, for clients that are interested in purchasing a home, and it seems like, you know, Habitat is a good option for them, we will definitely give them whatever information we can about Habitat, and then vice versa. If Habitat has any clients that maybe they need to work on their credit or their budget, or perhaps they're over income for their programs or just didn't work out, they can always refer them to us, and we're willing and able to help them in any way we can, whether it's just, you know, pre-purchase counseling or any of our down payment assistance programs.
Thank you.
All right, are there any other questions? Well, thank you. We certainly do appreciate all that you guys do to help our residents, and look forward to working with you again.
Thank you. We look forward to it as well.
All righty. Next up is PVCC, Piedmont Virginia Community College.
Good afternoon, everyone. I appreciate you giving us a little time to update you on things at the college. I'm Ben Copeland. I joined the college back in May of 2020 as the Vice President of Finance. So all I've known is COVID and the pandemic, so it's been an interesting summer and fall semester, now moving into the spring. Next slide, please. So the data I'm going to share with you tonight is all based off of the 1920 school year. There's the number of residents from Sylvania County that are enrolled, and it makes up a total of 11%. Of the total population enrolling at the college. Next slide, please. Further break it down as to where we see a lot of other enrollments. High school students related to dual enrollment is significant from the students in the high schools. There are the numbers there. And for those of you that don't know, for dual enrollment, it's really it's a zero cost to them. There's payments that are made, and then there are reimbursements that are sent back to the different schools and divisions. Can we move to the next slide, please? Just break it down a little bit further. A component of students are distance learning type courses, and you can see the number of residents within the county that are participating in that. Next slide, please. We also supported the correctional center pre-pandemic. We're hoping to get that restarted as the Pell Grants have been expanded, so I think we'll get back into that over the summer and the fall. And then the last slide related to how we serve, next slide please, is related to workforce development. This is really a program designed and focused on getting students the skills they need to immediately enter the workforce. Lots of great programs there. Few of the pictures I grabbed down at the bottom, solar energy, which is growing and improving, welding, CDL, lots of healthcare, CNA, pharmacy tech programs, things like that. Next slide, last slide, please. Our request for this upcoming budget cycle is $7,179. All the data has been submitted to your chief financial officer. I thank you for the support in the past, especially thank you for the contributions towards the new building over the previous 3 years. The new building is progressing in design, and we hope to be breaking ground on that sometime in 2021. And I'll gladly answer any questions you may have.
What programs do you have for the women in the correctional center?
The majority of those were credit-based courses as they progress towards degrees.
Mm-hmm. Do you have quite a few that get the associate degree?
Hold on 1 second. I've got a data sheet here. I don't know if it's broken down for the correctional center or not. I don't have a breakdown of degrees that might have been granted to them, but I will take a note and get that and send it to Mr. Dahl so he can share it with you.
Thank you.
Well, when it said 321, I know who the one was. My youngest is 9 rolled up there.
Yeah.
So he's starting his second semester.
Great.
That's good.
And he's all online. In fact, when we're in about an hour, he'll be starting his classes.
Wonderful.
Good school.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the support.
Well, thank you so very much. Look forward to working with you guys. All righty. Next is Region 10.
Good evening.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Great.
Hi, my name is Aisha Williams-Cassano. I'm the director of Region 10 Savannah Counseling Center. And I just want to start by thanking you all for your time. As you all know, Region 10 is one of 40 community service boards serving every city and county in Virginia, operating under the auspices of the Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Services in Richmond. Our service area covers the city of Charlottesville and the surrounding counties of Albemarle, Savannah, Nelson, Louisa, and Greene. So Region 10 has a number of different programs. I think it's somewhere over 60 different programs that provide help for mental health, substance use disorders, and developmental disabilities. These programs provide aid and support to people of all ages and varying levels of need, ranging from outpatient therapy services, where someone just may meet with a counselor once a week for a short time, all the way up to residential programs that provide 24/7 crisis support. The last year, Region 10 provided services to over 10,000 individuals, and over 900 of those served were residents of Savannah County. This gap last year, we're meeting different than we usually do for this. As you know, COVID brought a lot of challenges and the need for us to quickly transition the majority of our services to a telehealth model and make modifications to those services that must still be provided in person. However, I have to say that during this time, staff have shown a deep commitment to the people we serve and creativity in finding ways to continue to provide the needed and necessary supports while keeping themselves and our consumers safe. So currently, the Savannah Counseling Center employs 9 full-time staff. We have staff that provide mental health support coordination or case management for adults and children with serious mental illness or serious emotional disturbance. We also have staff who provide specialized support coordination to individuals of all ages with intellectual or developmental disabilities. We now have 3 full-time clinicians who are able to provide individual and group counseling services for mental health as well as substance use disorders. And they're also able to provide crisis counseling and screenings for more intensive levels of care, such as hospitalization, crisis stabilization, and residential treatment. I am also happy to report that Region 10 is the treatment provider of choice for the county's new drug treatment court program. And I really look forward to seeing how this program grows and provides us with opportunities to expand the number of services that we provide locally in Louisiana. Other positive news is that Region 10's OBOP program, which is our office-based opioid treatment program, is expanding or looking to expand to provide services not just in Louisa and Greene counties, but also we're looking at making it more available to our consumers here in Savannah County as well. And for those who may not be familiar with what I'm talking about for OBOT, it's medication-assisted treatment. We use medication to help reduce or eliminate withdrawal symptoms or cravings for people who have opioid use disorders. And it's proven to be very effective method of treatment. So those are the services that we have in Savannah, and residents of Savannah also have access to all the other services that are provided in other parts of the community. This funding that you all, so gracious to provide to us every year helps us to make sure that the quality of the community of the services meets the needs of people in the community, to keep them in the community where they want to stay. Thank you for your time.
Okay, do we have any questions?
Aisha.
Yes.
Do you still have students, are your people going to the schools with this COVID that need the individual help?
So at this time, we don't currently have our TDT program. I'm hopeful that once things get back to whatever normal it's going to look like in the future, I don't think it'll be the same, that we'll be able to have something in the schools again, but we don't currently have that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you so much for what you do for our citizens.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. All right, next up is the Rivanna Conservation Alliance. Ravana Conservation Alliance.
Yes, hi, my name is Rachel Pence, and I'm the Monitoring Program Manager with the Ravana Conservation Alliance, and I'm happy to be here today to talk more about our water quality monitoring programs. I'm not seeing my presentation come up on the screen yet.
What's that?
There's a dot, but...
This is their book on our desk,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, hold on.
It's not a PowerPoint.
Is this it? Okay, there we go. Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah.
No, that's not it. That is a PDF of our stream health report.
The book we have.
Liz, do you have the email? Stream health report?
Yeah.
Sorry, Rachel. Give us one moment, please.
Oh, that's okay. Take your time.
Mr. Chair, what if we do this? What if we keep on going with the next presenter, if possible, if that's okay with Rachel, and then hopefully we can get the presentation to us in that time?
Rachel, are you good with that?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Yeah, we'll try to get that stuff straightened out, but it'll slide you down a little bit.
Sorry about that.
Okay, that's fine. No worries.
All righty. So now we'll move forward with Sarah, the Sexual Assault Resource Agency.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Bastable, and I'm the philanthropy coordinator at the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, also known as SARA. The mission of the Sexual Assault Resource Agency is to eliminate sexual violence and its impacts by providing education, advocacy, and support to women, men, and children throughout our area. The scope of the problem we address is vast. We know that 1 in 3 women, 1 in 6 men, and 1 in 2 transgender individuals will experience sexual violence at some point in their lifetime. The estimated lifetime economic burden of child sexual abuse is $9.3 billion in the nation, which is largely felt by local economies where survivors live, work, and go to school. Now, I know those are heavy numbers to digest, but let me tell you this. That in the fiscal year 2020, SARA provided services to 44 survivors in Savannah County. This included 2 adult men, 38 adult women, and 4 children, 2 boys and 2 girls. These survivors were offered over 250 hours of services, including therapy, advocacy, court accompaniment, and case management. We know that when survivors lack access to mental health, medical, and legal assistance, they're more likely to experience severe and long-term post-traumatic stress. Conversely, survivors recover a sense of well-being more quickly when they're fully supported by family, friends, and members of the community. To that end, SARA provides prevention education to create sustainable cultural change for safer, more empathetic communities. Our prevention programs are in schools, faith communities, and other community organizations. We provide advocacy and support services to address the impacts of sexual violence for survivors and their loved ones. SARA staff advocates participate in Savannah County multidisciplinary teams, as well as the IAC community agency team. We're very grateful to be a part of these collaborative efforts that ensure timely response when survivors report and come forward to share their stories. Our outreach director participates in the sexual assault response team, also known as SART. And our outreach efforts work to increase awareness about sexual violence to decrease barriers to services and programs. We've enjoyed past events in Luvana County. I know I was at the Community Safety Day one summer and greatly enjoyed that event. We'll look forward to the days when we can join Sarah and Luvana County in events together again. Until then, your support ensures that survivors receive free comprehensive services throughout the pandemic and beyond. Thank you all very much for your commitment to our mission, for your financial support, as well as your partnerships. We're so grateful.
All righty, does anyone have a question for Sarah?
I guess every year I ask the same question. Is Sarah in the school system in Fluvanna?
We have recently received an invitation to begin a group in the middle school. Mm-hmm. One of our youth advocate was invited to begin that curriculum. So we're in the planning process, and we'll be sure to keep you updated on that.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much. We appreciate all you guys do. Next up is the Shelter for Help and Emergency.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, sorry, I am here, but for some reason my video isn't starting. Well, the host has stopped my video, so you don't get the benefit of looking at my wonderful face, but I think you can probably survive without that. I appreciate being given time to speak to you again this year, and obviously under rather more difficult circumstances than usual, but the shelter, we have enjoyed support from yourselves in Fluvanna for many, many years, and we aim to continue providing services in your area for victims of domestic violence. So we're often confused with SARA, which is a sister agency to us. Sometimes people think we're the same agency, but we're not. We're separate agencies, and we deal specifically in domestic violence, and we run a 25-bed residential shelter for emergency purposes, and a 24-hour crisis hotline for access to our services. We also provide full wraparound services for any clients who wish them, whether they're in our shelter or whether they're still residing in the community. So that's counseling support, advocacy services, help with finding housing, employment, training, childcare, whatever it might be that somebody needs in order to get their life back on track again. We work closely with the Commonwealth Attorney's Office and the Victim Witness services there. We also work closely with the Sheriff's Department in Fluvanna County. We very much enjoy working in a collaborative program with the Sheriff's Department called the Lethality Assessment Program. And that program is designed to seek to support victims who are at high risk of serious injury or fatality. Domestic violence can, and certainly does on occasion, result in some serious injuries and has resulted in death. So we work closely with the Sheriff's Department to identify people who they believe are at risk and put those people in touch with us at the shelter through our hotline for services. And we very much enjoy that collaboration and appreciate the opportunity to work with the department to train their officers to better understand domestic violence and what it means and how we can support them in their work and the victims. We do have connections, and responding to the earlier question to Sarah, we do have some connection in the Fluvanna schools, and we're hoping to develop that further. We have had some connection with the Fluvanna High School. Obviously, you know, over the last year, a lot of these activities have been halted, and we're looking forward to resuming them like everybody is as soon as we can. We have stayed open all the way through the COVID period. When I say open, we are open for services, providing telehealth services in terms of counseling and support for those people who need that. But our shelter has remained open. We are providing residential services for those that need it. We've had to obviously modify a lot of the ways we operate to keep it healthy and safe for people, but I'm glad to say, touch wood, we've come through that and we're continuing to operate in a safe and supportive manner. In the last year, the last financial year, we provided services in FluBanner to 18 clients who went into our residential facility, and they stayed for a total of 205 bed nights. And we also worked with 23 additional clients who didn't need or want to come into the residential program but did participate in other services. And we received 82 calls to our hotline from FluBanner County residents. So the services are very much needed in the community. We do have an advocate assigned to FluBanner County, and she hasn't been obviously operating in person in the area for some time, although she does go to the court sessions when they're being held. Again, we hope once this whole COVID business is over, we will be back out, visible, and able to support anybody who needs our help. Our hotline is the first port of call for anybody who needs resources and support. Any questions?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll now, and SIRCAP is not speaking.
SIRCAP's not speaking, and we've located the missing presentation.
Ah, so we will go back to the Ravana Conservation Alliance. Good timing, because I just
let me just pull it up here really quick.
We say that, Rachel. We might be teasing
you.
No,
we have it. It's there. It's there.
Thank you.
Is this it?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
What is it doing?
There we go.
Anticipation.
There we go.
bingo.
Thank you so much. My name is Rachel Pence, and I'm happy to be here on behalf of my organization, the Ravana Conservation Alliance, to talk more about our water quality monitoring programs. Go to the next slide. A little bit of background about our organization. We were formed in 2016 by a merger of two different organizations, the Ravana Conservation Society and Streamwatch, and RCS was actually founded in FluBanner County in 1990, so we do have roots here in the county. And our organization works to conserve the Ravana River and its tributaries through monitoring, restoration, education, and advocacy. Get the next slide. So just to orient ourselves a little bit, the Ravana River watershed does lie within the Greater Chesapeake Bay watershed, and it completely encompasses the city of Charlottesville and significant portions of Greene County, Albemarle County, and Fluvanna County. So everything that we do here in the Ravana River watershed does have an impact on the downstream James River and the Chesapeake Bay. You can go to the next slide. Our organization has various programs to help fulfill our vision and our mission, one of which is an education program where we teach local students about local water quality, and we host public outreach events. And we also have informational kiosks installed at a few high-use recreational areas along the river. For our river stewards program, we have different staff members that go out on the river and paddle various portions, and then they report on conditions to the public and certain community partners, including any potentially unsafe conditions and hazards related to recreational usage. And then they also host and organize a bunch of river cleanup events. You can go to the next slide.
Last year, we organized our first ever Ravana River Roundup, which was a really, really fun event, and we worked really, really hard to make this safe and COVID-friendly, and it was a river-wide trash and tire cleanup event. And we started at the confluence of the North and South Fork Ravana River and cleaned up the entire section of the river all the way down to Columbia, where the Ravana meets up with the James River. And we ended up cleaning up 10 miles of the river in Fluviana County, including at the Crofton and Palmyra boat launches. And we ended up removing over 50 tires and tons of trash and debris within this stretch of the river. And I want to thank Fluviana County especially for supporting this event and by providing supplies, including these orange trash bags that are pictured here, and helping us dispose of the tires and trash. It really helped us make this first event really, really successful, and we're excited to keep this going year to year. You can go to the next slide. Some of our other activities include conservation projects. We install rain gardens, and we do a lot of tree planting events and install buffers surrounding streams in the watershed. We also own the Shire Natural Area, where we have an education center and host different volunteer events and workshops out there. But by far the biggest thing that we do is level 3 water quality monitoring, which I'll talk about in more detail. You can go to the next slide. One of our programs is a benthic monitoring program where volunteers go out and they collect and sample for benthic macroinvertebrates, which is just a big word for the small organisms that live at the bottom of rivers and streams. And we collect these organisms because they are really, really important ecological indicators. And the number and diversity of these organisms are indicative of stream health or water quality. So they tell us a lot about the quality of local rivers and streams. And we conduct this sampling at 50 different locations across the Ravana watershed. And we sample these locations twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. And most of these sites have data that goes back to 2004. So we have a really nice long-term comprehensive data set where we're starting to look at more long-term trends over time. And you can go to the next slide. Our other water quality monitoring program is for bacteria, where volunteers go out and they test for E. coli bacteria levels at local waterways. And E. coli is an important indicator. It indicates the presence of human or animal waste in water. So it's something you definitely do not want to come into contact with above a certain level, because it can lead to some pretty serious health problems. And for this program, we have volunteers that go out and sample at 18 different urban sites that are sampled once a month from March through November. And two of these sites are really, really high use recreational sites. So we test those once a week during the summer months when people are out and about. And we've noticed that collecting this type of data has been increasingly more important during this time of COVID, as more and more people are turning to the outdoors during the pandemic. And we've seen a notable increase in the amount of people that are seeking out this type of data in order to help them make decisions on the appropriate or safe times to go out and enjoy local waterways. You can go to the next slide. So this is a map showing all of our sampling locations or monitoring sites in Fluviana County. We currently have 12 benthic monitoring locations in the county, and we have two different bacteria sampling locations in the county as well, one of which is at the Crofton boat ramp, and then we also added a new site at the Palmyra boat launch last year. It's not shown in that, but we do have two bacteria locations. You can go to the next slide. So I mentioned level 3 water quality monitoring, but haven't defined what that is yet. And so this is a really, really important distinction that our organization has. Our programs have been certified at level 3, which basically just means that the data that we collect meets the same standard and quality as that is what is collected by a state agency or a local government. So, for example, DEQ can and does use our data as if they collected it themselves, because it meets this really, really high standard, which is really, really unique. And then you can click the next slide. And we have the unique distinction of being the only nonprofit organization in the state of Virginia to have level 3 certification for both of our benthic and bacteria monitoring programs. So who does monitoring help? Well, it certainly helps the community and area residents. They can learn more about laboratory techniques, and they get alerted on water quality and water safety issues prior to going out and recreating. And by being involved in this process, they do become more engaged in caring for local waterways. And then by doing this, we're also protecting a regional natural and economic asset. It also helps government decision makers because we are identifying pollution hotspots that need further investigation. And it's also being used to track Virginia's progress in protecting the Chesapeake Bay. And we also do inform these watershed cleanup plans that are referred to as total maximum daily load assessments, or TMDLs. And we've been involved in the Cunningham Creek TMDL process in Flumana County. And more recently, our data is being used to inform the North Fork and South Fork TMDLs, which are two separate cleanup plans that are taking place right now. And we are assisting DEQ and EPA in assessing water quality and identifying impaired waters in the watershed, which is really important. So our monitoring program is extremely beneficial and very, very impactful. You can go to the next slide. And with that, I just want to thank you all for your ongoing support of Clean Water and our monitoring program. Thank you so much.
All righty.
I have maybe a silly question.
Okay.
The trash and tires and things that's in the water, how do they affect the water quality? And what kind of program should we have to keep people from putting trash and tires and things in the water? Do we have any, what is it called, the kids at the high school, right? Mm-hmm. And what's the clubs that they used to have at the high school?
I mean, you got the SGA. I used to have Helping Hands, and we would go do stuff to clean up around.
that's the only thing I was interested in. Are people aware of the damage that they're doing when they pollute the waters? Do they have enough information out there that people can understand why they're doing what they're doing?
And the tires that were in the river, where were a lot of those found? Were they like by a particular boat ramp, or were they just kind of spread throughout?
They were certainly spread throughout the reach of that 10-mile stretch that was cleaned up as part of the Roundup event. Certainly, some tires are pretty difficult to remove if they've been in there for a significant amount of time and have to use different tools to get them separated away from the sediment.
Yes.
And some tires, unfortunately, we couldn't remove because they've been in there for so long. But trash and debris certainly do have an impact on water quality. Certain pollutants do tend to bind to certain types of debris. So we do make an effort to host cleanup events throughout the year in order to remove that type of.
We can preach it up, trying to get them not to do it, but my son and I spent a lot of time down on near Columbia in the Rivanna just waiting, and it's amazing how many folks just ride along, and when they finish their beer, it ends up on the bottom of the river.
But how do they get those real large tires in there? That's what I'm wondering.
I think a lot of times they get picked up by floodwaters also and drug in there.
And I would be surprised, too, if maybe people then maybe by the bridges or the boat ramps, if they didn't have a way to dispose of them, they dispose of them.
Well, and sometimes with the tires, I hate to say it this way, but people will put those in there hoping that will draw a catfish in there to stay around
inside
of it. I know that I had a gentleman lived near us, had his own pond, and he thought that was a way the catfish would breed was inside of a tire.
So maybe we just need to, it's all about educating.
Well,
educating the community. People don't do it,
so why
do it?
I can tell you right now,
two or three.
Rachel, we did a thing this year because, you had to be inventive with school teaching. And when we were all virtual, we would call them Field Trip Wednesdays. And you were sitting there talking about your different things. We actually made videos at the Shire Natural Area, and we paddled from Crofton down to Palmyra, trying to just show families, hey, these are some of the things that you can do in the outdoors and go and enjoy. I mean, what beautiful places.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. It's definitely a treasure we need to keep working to conserve and protect, absolutely.
Yes, sir. I did have a fishing pole in my hand when we were paddling, but those ladies were not happy with me because I would try to stop the fish, and they were in a hurry.
Yeah. I think that the more that we share this, the more people will realize how important it is and how... You know, we have a wonderful situation. We've got the Ravana and the James.
I think one of the biggest things that we can do is, Rachel, we can work with y'all in trying to get volunteer groups. Because I used to take my youth group and go down to the James at Scottsville, and we would do a river cleanup. Because the tubing one of the tubing companies, the reeling and rafting, would work with us. And as long as we were cleaning trash, they would help get us on the river and get us off.
Right. And those kids, when they do that, then they understand, and they get to be adults, and they see other adults, they're going to say, ooh,
We did it one day, Rachel. You were talking about the tires, and I have to laugh because I had kids pulling these tires up, and we almost sunk a canoe because we had it so filled up with tires. we had about an inch of leeway before we were going to go down. But thank y'all for everything that you do, and please, I think the communication, like Ms. Booker's talking about, we haven't been able to do our river. It's y'all's group that does the river float, I believe, correct?
Yes, that's right, Riverfest.
And so, because we're gonna get that thing done. And the one thing I'm looking at the chart that I didn't like is a lot of the. Our water quality in Fluvanna is a little bit better because we're more rural, but a lot of ours in Fluvanna were moving down and not moving up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking that, you know, if you got a blue triangle, that means you move down out of the blue. So, you know, they're right there.
That's right. It's been exacerbated by all the precipitation over the past few years, for sure, but other factors are at play as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's got to be a big help with the program, and I think it's the federal government is doing it, where they're coming in and doing the fencing to help keep the animals out of the streams.
Right.
They've been doing that.
They've been doing that for a while, but they've really gotten into it the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Alrighty, thank you for everything that y'all do.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your support.
Do we have extra booklets that we could put out somewhere, like the post office? Because, you know, they have some wonderful pictures in here.
I don't. Well, I recommend the library, too. Yeah.
Oh, here's one question for you, Rachel. Mm-hmm. Do y'all ever look for more volunteers to try and draw different areas in the streams and just trying to get to them?
I'm sorry, can you repeat? I missed the first part of your question.
I'm looking at the chart. And you've got the predetermined spots where y'all pull the samples from twice a year. Do you ever look for volunteers to try and get to more streams? Does that make sense?
Yes, we would love to expand our program. We're always looking for additional volunteers. And more recently, we've been contacted by private landowners that are taking more and more of an interest on water quality and on their private property. So we would like to host private workshops with landowners that want to collect that data on their own land, but we're also looking to expand our long-term monitoring programs as well.
Do you all work with our extension agency, Kim Mayo?
With the Virginia Cooperative Extension at all?
Not to my knowledge, but I can ask about that. I'm more so focused on the data collection, and then some other staff members are more so on the restoration side of things, so I can definitely ask more about that.
And one last part. Go ahead, Tony.
I was going to ask if they're currently doing any monitoring for any of the power plants in the area.
No, we are not currently.
Now, my question would be, looking at the map on Fluvanna, and y'all are going, like you said, public access where you can get to it on road crossings. If y'all were to come up with a map of spots that you might like to do testing and could get that to us, we might know somebody where we can get there and do that.
That'd be great. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, I think that's one way that we as a board can help, because we'll know some of the landowners. If you can show us streams that you'd like to be tested, we may know somebody along that stream right. that would agree to allow that to happen.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you.
Next up is Thomas Jefferson Soil and Water Conservation District.
Hi there, this is Ann Coates. I'm going to turn my video off here in a second just because I've got low bandwidth at my house. But I just wanted to at least say hi and thank you for getting the presentation up.
And just say next when you want me to go to the next slide, please.
All right, thank you so much. Well, I'm Ann Coates and I've presented to you all, I think this is my fourth year with the district, and I'm excited to be here and appreciate your time. We have two offices, one located in Charlottesville and one located in Louisa. We actually cover Fluvanna out of both of those offices. Next slide. I think most of you all probably know this story already, but it's good to refresh for those folks who are new. What's a conservation district? They were formed in the 1930s nationwide. There are 3,000 conservation districts across the country, 47 districts in Virginia, and about 98% of the land in the United States is actually covered by a conservation district. One of the unique things about conservation districts when they were formed, and this was part of President Roosevelt's vision, was that he wanted a local board of directors to help direct where some of the federal funding and state funding would go at a very local level. And so there was a distinct decision requested of each state, which was to develop an enabling act that would allow those board of directors to be adopted in local districts to make those local decisions and to utilize where the funding, to designate where that funding should go. Next slide. You all are probably familiar with a few of our board members. They've been on our board for as long as I have, and some much longer. We cover Nelson County, Albemarle County, Fluvanna, Louisa, and the city of Charlottesville as well. So five localities. We do have two directors from each of the localities, equaling 10. And then John Easter is an at-large director. He takes one of those seats. And then Carrie Swanson from Albemarle County Extension Office has our other seat. So we have a total of 12 voting directors. But we actually have 17 directors at the moment, so the remaining five are associate directors. It's the largest group of directors we've had in a very, very long time. So we're happy, and I think that we've got a really engaged board, and I certainly know that all of them would be happy to touch base if anybody has any questions about our programs that I can't answer. We do have a staff of 9 full-time and 1 part-time, and majority of our funding comes from local agencies like yourself, and we're very grateful. We also leverage that funding to bring in additional state funding as well as federal. Next slide. Our agricultural programs are our biggest programs, and I heard someone mention us during the RCA's presentation, which was maybe a good segue for us to follow. Since 1998, we have protected 38 miles of stream with the fencing that someone mentioned earlier. So we have paid for all of that fencing in what we call direct cost share payments. So those are checks that have been directly provided to landowners that own properties in those areas where there's sensitive waterways. And so we've actually paid out that much, and also $77,000 in tax credits. I think one of the unique things about it, of course, in today's age is that it meets those water quality regulations that were mentioned for Chesapeake Bay, as well as the TMDL, but it's also creating jobs for people in the community, and it's helping to pay for contractors to do that fencing work, and certainly a lot of the farmers actually help as well. Next slide. do have a map that shows, it would be really interesting to compare this map to the RCA's map. Maybe we can get in touch with them and do an overlay of where their monitoring sites are in relation to where the projects we have completed. Now, this map shows the projects that we've completed since 1998. I believe this report was run in the fall, so current means through FY20, really. But it includes everything from exclusion fencing, which was mentioned. It also includes our septic program, and then alternative watering systems, the vegetative cover and tree establishment. There's a variety of conservation practices that we install, but these are sort of the highlights of them. Next slide. As you can see, you know, the funding that we get from the state comes in waves. We will get more funding at the beginning of what they call the WIP cycle, the Water Enhancement Program or Incentive Program for the Chesapeake Bay. So at the beginning of the WIP cycle, there'll be a surge and then it sort of tapers off. So as you can see, over time, it fluctuates. It makes it difficult for us to manage staffing, of course, but we've done a really good job, and you can see over time, we've continued to deliver higher and higher amounts of dollars each year. Next slide. Just for last year alone in FY20, I think it was one of our largest years for Flavanna County. We had total direct cost share payments in $310,000, and that was just paid out for last year. That was a combination of $281,000 from us, and the $29,000 comes most likely from NRCS and maybe a little bit of DEQ. But that's the dollar amount that was paid to your landowners in Flavanna. For FY21, which of course we're currently in right now, we already have 12 projects under construction, and we have $221,000 allocated already this year. So this year is also proving to be a big year. Overall, district-wide, we delivered $2.8 million last year, which is the highest year on record for us. So even with the pandemic shut down on March 13th, we were able to deliver an extra $500,000 just in those last 3 months. So we've got a fantastic team, they're go-getters, and we're certainly always ready and willing to help in any way we can. Just let us know. Next slide. We also do, as we've mentioned, septic program. This funding is actually just run out for what we would cover in the Flavanna area, except for there might be a little bit left in the Hardware watershed. But in the last 3 years, we've completed 31 projects and paid out $57,000 to landowners. And landowners themselves contributed $37,000 of their own money. So a lot of these cost share programs where we will pay for a portion of it, the landowner is also required to pay. And I think that's just important so you know that, you know, they're actually putting in funding for these important water quality projects as well. Next slide. So this is a new program for us. We received a private donation from an anonymous donor, and we were able to complete 2 equine-related conservation projects in Flavanna last year alone. So it's totaling $32,000 in cost share payments to landowners, and the landowners themselves contributed $11,000. And here's an example of one, and you can see a before and after photo where there's a lot of mud, that's standing water in the photo on the left. It's certainly not healthy for the horses, and it's definitely not healthy for our watersheds. The photo on the right is after completion, and so far, last time we checked, it's holding up well. So we're really proud of that, and we're happy to have that. It's a short-term program because it was an anonymous donor. There are a few statewide programs that we can tap into, but not at this level. But this was really a great effort, and we were excited to be able to provide it. Next slide. One of the things that we've done, obviously, with the COVID, I think all of us have had to get creative with our electronic forms of outreach. We increased our social media presence, providing what we call timely topics. These are just a couple of examples. But, you know, taking soil tests in your pastures, it's really important that it be done at a certain time of year. So we started to provide these timely topics through our social media outreach when the items are relevant. We've increased our social media presence, and I think we've picked up almost 50% participation by landowners. So I think we're happy about that. I think we could do more, but at least it was, you know, kind of a good way for us to start electronically this way. increase that. Next slide.
Oops, hold on.
So another item that we decided to improve upon was their website presence. We've had a website for a while. We redid it about 4 or 5 years ago. But what we wanted to do was to provide a lot more electronic resources. So we've curated over 40 different agricultural related ones so that, you know, if you were to Google something like, you know, invasive plants or erosion on farms or fencing, if you go onto Google, you're going to get, you know, hundreds of thousands of hits that might not be relevant for the area. So what we've done is we've spent our time curating those and providing the ones that we think are the most relevant and have the best information. And they're on our website. It's also searchable by keyword. So we're finding this to be very helpful for a lot of folks. Next slide. We continue to have our conservation assistance program for residential landowners. The state provides our funding to run this program. It's about $500,000 a year statewide. We compete on a statewide level for it. I believe we actually helped to fund the rain garden over at the RCA's office in Charlottesville. That was one of our highlights last year in our annual report. So we're very proud of this program. Charlottesville and Albemarle chip in some extra funding for their district or for their locality specifically, but mostly the funding comes from the state. Next. Our conservation education program has obviously had to look hard this year, like many of the educational programs, at how we do our outreach. Most all of the traditional types of efforts we provided were in person, although we do also provide scholarships to conservation camp, colleges, etc. I believe you did have a winner last year, I believe her name was Mackenzie. We have continued to provide additional educational resources on our website. There's two new programs coming out with these patches, which there'll be some online educational resources where the students can earn a patch by completing some certain water conservation and soil tasks. And so we're hoping that this will kind of provide an incentive or maybe a reward at the end for them participating. We know that being at home is hard for a lot of students, and certainly we are a very hands-on organization, so we fully appreciate the challenges that they face. Next slide. The educational program has also included an unbelievable amount of resources for folks that either are looking to provide education in the classroom, or even if it's just individuals who are looking to have projects for their children on the weekends, their grandchildren. There's a lot of really fun resources on the website that you can safely send your kids outdoors, you know, on a little adventure. Some things are done indoors with just real minimal objects that you might have in your household. So we did spend quite a bit of time trying to build this so that those resources for children that were at home were readily available and, again, curated. So, next slide. Our easement program does include one of the Habitat houses at Houchins Place subdivision. I believe you all are familiar with this, but the easements in Fluvanna County cover 6,000 linear feet of riparian forested buffer and 360 acres. Those are the five locations there. They do have a water quality focus. And we do accept conservation easements on small acreages, where a lot of the larger easement programs throughout the state and the nation are really focused on large tracts of land. We do have the ability to work with small landowners. The primary goal is to protect water, so we're looking for stormwater type projects. Next slide.
There's Wiggy property.
In the Houchins Place subdivision, the easement is in that kind of bright green area, and they were able to utilize that area to help offset their stormwater mitigation requirements. So it's a win-win. It's good for the environment, it's good for the habitat, and it reduced the costs, of course, for the subdivision by not having to maintain as many giant concrete spillways, and they certainly didn't have to pay for those in the beginning either. So we think it's a win-win where the land is available, and we'd be happy to explore that with any new subdivisions you think might be eligible for this. Next slide. Okay. that's my last slide, and I know that if you all have any questions, I know you have had some in the past, and I'll be happy to answer anything you, any questions you have, and always here to help.
How do rain gardens work?
Would you say that again? It cut out a little, just
yes.
A little.
How do rain gardens work?
That's a good question. They capture runoff from your impervious surfaces. And so there's a volume calculation we do. It comes from the roof of your house or from maybe your driveway or a hard surfaced area where there's runoff. And it captures it and basically sinks it into the ground into a layered, garden, if you will, that has layers of drainage features in it, as well as certain kinds of vegetation that are more adaptable to wet feet. So they can withstand and tolerate very wet feet. They can also withstand drought, because obviously its garden itself is not going to be wet all year long. But the plants typically selected in those garden areas are ones that absorb water. But the primary goal is really to pull that runoff and to sink it down into the ground so that it doesn't run into the street. It doesn't take sediment off your property or soil off your property and cause erosion issues. It doesn't take the soil and, you know, clog up a drain or send it into the creek artificially. So those are, I'm not sure if that helps. We've got lots of great diagrams, and I think there's even some great videos. We do plan on putting those on our website, similar to the education program and the agricultural program. We're going to have the residential tips curated and loaded in the next 2 months. So there's probably a few out there already, but our goal is to make sure that you all are getting the best available information in one location.
Thank you very much.
All righty, any other questions? Thank you for that report. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And did you notice the timing? I was talking about the program of keeping the animals out of the streams. Right there with it.
Great segue.
Yes.
You have a great evening. Next up is the Thomas Jefferson EMS Council.
We've always contributed to the Thomas Jefferson, and honestly, if I remember correctly, I think the amount that they requested has been the same for as long as I can remember.
Well, then we will move forward with the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission.
Okay. Chairman Sheridan, Board of Supervisors, and all the Flubana staff, thanks for having me here today. I'm Chip Boyle, the Executive Director, and thanks for allowing us to provide you a very quick summary of the projects we have working with Flubana in the past year and what we hope to achieve in fiscal year 22. It's just going to be a quick summary because after working with Flubana County for 49 years now, you all know probably better than some of us what all we do. We have once again for fiscal year 22, again for over 15 years now, been able to keep our per capita requests to our local government members at the same rate of 62 cents per capita and also 40 cents per capita for legislative liaison services. We're really proud that we haven't had to come to our local governments with any type of increased per capita request. We've also this year maintained the FY21 requests for rideshare programs, our solid waste and recycling program, and our Robina River Basin Commission, the same as all previous years, again for fiscal year 22. As many of you already know, this might be my last presentation to you from the PDC. We'll begin work with the City of Charlottesville in February, so you aren't completely rid of me. I just won't get to see you nearly as often. But you're in great hands. 2 years ago, under the leadership of our commission, which you have two members, Supervisor Tony O'Brien and a citizen member, Keith Smith, we instituted a succession plan that created a deputy director and a chief operating officer in case of a leadership position did become vacant. Now that this has happened, our Chief Operating Officer, Christine Jacobs, who's on the call with us today, will be the Interim Executive Director. And David Blunt will, of course, be providing day-to-day assistance with that. But he'll continue his legislative liaison duties in full. This allows Christine to be full-time as the Interim Executive Director. Both Christine and David will see that our work in fiscal year 21 is continued and completed. It includes a number of projects, such as the Zion Crossroads Corridor Plan, which is just a couple of months away from completion, the Ravana River Rural Corridor Plan, and then also the Regional Affordable Housing Plan, not to mention our continued work with broadband facilitation and working with the Central Virginia Co-op in their expansion into Fluvanna County and all of our rural areas of our region. Other programs that are new, we're really happy to be implementing, is a Chesapeake Bay Watershed Program, where we're able to provide direct local assistance to our counties. This is a program that's fully funded by the Department of Environmental Quality and your per capita payments that are made to the PDC. Another program that continues or is new to us is the Regional Affordable Housing Resource website. All of our jurisdictions, including Fluvanna County, contributed some of your CARES Act funds to create this website, and now we're able to provide free listings of affordable rental units on the website, and also a resource page so that people who are looking for assistance with affordable housing repairs, even mortgage assistance, and fair housing issues, they have one website within our region that they can go and get this assistance. I do have to say we really need your assistance here. Fluvanna County has the least number of available rental units on our website. It even fluctuates where sometimes there are no available units in Fluvanna County. So if you have some property owners or landlords that have rental units, if you might send them to us, let us show them how to get their properties listed on the website. We sure would like to increase that inventory for Fluvanna County. And all anybody has to do is go to our website, tjpdc.org. And the very first thing that pops up is the name of our affordable housing portal. And the name of it is Porchlight. So we'd be very, very appreciative if you could send any of your rental property owners that way. Under our affordable rental housing, one of our real successful programs this past year has been the Rental and Mortgage Relief Program. We're very happy to say that we were able to provide over $100,000 to tenants in a rental housing in Fluvanna County who were in jeopardy of being evicted due to COVID negative effects on their economic situation. So while we did distribute close to $1.8 million across the region, $100,000 of that went to Fluvanna County residents. And all of these were generated without any additional funding from our local governments, except for our website. We're also really glad one of the newest things, a project that we supported in Fluvanna County and was just announced yesterday, is VDOT has recommended funding for your Troy Road and Route 250 roundabout. The Commonwealth Transportation Board received that information yesterday, and that roundabout was one of the recommended projects for funding. So we're very happy that we were able to support that project. Finally, for fiscal year 22, we plan to continue these programs with just a few adjustments. Our rideshare program, which is a carpooling program, with COVID, has had absolutely no takers for nearly a year. And so we're beginning to do more education to teach companies and people how they can work from home and work remotely using the internet and the advantages that may be from that. And so that's a little bit of a change to our rideshare program. The other thing that we're currently exploring, as I know you're all aware, counties now have the opportunity through the General Assembly to institute a cigarette tax at the local level. There's some legislation out that may mandate that that be done at a regional level. So David Blunt and I have been working on and working with staff members from each of the jurisdictions on what that would look like if we were to group 5, 6, or 10 jurisdictions together and run a collective cigarette tax program, that the monies then are just funneled back to the local jurisdictions. That could very well be a major initiative for us in the coming year. Financially, we expect to have just over a $2 million balanced budget for the Planning District Commission. Our member dues that come from each of our jurisdictions only makes up 8% of our total revenues. Over 70% of our revenues come from both state and federal sources. And Fluvanna County's request of $34,845 is 11% of the total local per capita that we receive from all of our jurisdictions. So again, we thank you for all the work that we've been doing with you, and I know that the staff at the PDC looks forward to working with you some more, and I look forward to working with you on some of the regional issues. We'll be glad to answer any questions you might have.
I have one about the Rappahannock River Basin Commission. I'm on that, I think, along with Mrs. Eager, and we haven't been very active this year. So I don't know, and that's the...
You are correct. It's, I think, you know, I don't want to blame everything on the pandemic, and now that we are able to institute some, you know, virtual meetings, I do anticipate that that will pick back up. I do know that the big activity for that program is the annual summit that this past year was done online and by far had the most attendees and participants than ever. The other thing that I believe is going to help supplement that program is the Chesapeake Bay Watershed Improvement Program that's being funded by DEQ. We now have a half-time person that's on staff, and that for 20 hours a week, she works solely with the Chesapeake Bay Program, which works hand-in-hand with the Rappahannock River Basin Commission. So, Supervisor, I think you'll see more activities coming in FY22.
Okay. And the other thing is, when I was reading David Blunt's report on the cigarette taxes, I thought it had a region of like 10 to 15 areas. You had mentioned from 5 to, and that kind of startled me because it looked like...
Sure. Right now, I think it is, I'm trying to remember the Senator Hanger has proposed a bill that would require it to be at least 10 jurisdictions to make up a region. But it's just, that's just been in the bill stage. As of right now, local governments could begin July 1st, unless some other legislation is passed to even be able to do it individually. So it's whether Senator Hanger's bill, how it progresses and how it may be modified during the General Assembly this month and next month.
Okay.
Not a question, but just a comment. I want to thank Chip for all his hard work on the DKPDC. When he came on board, the organization was struggling financially. He brought really solid leadership and helped transform it so that it's in very healthy shape. And of course, spearheaded so many of the great projects that they're doing. It's been a pleasure working with them, and I'm sorry to see you go, and wish you all the best of luck in your new position.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So board members, I believe, if you don't know, Chip is he's going to the city of Charlottesville to be the city manager. So he's going to be leaving his post at the TJPDC and not going too far away. So. You know, he'll still be in the area, and I still have the pleasure to work with him. So
we will. I will not be moving, I can guarantee that. Thank you, I hear that a lot.
All righty, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
And good luck. All righty, next up, last but not least, is John. Do we have somebody from John?
We're supposed to have someone from John.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, there we go.
Good evening. Oh, there she is. I'm here.
We got you.
Thank you very much for allowing me to present tonight. My name is Karen Davis. I'm the interim director, CEO of Jaunt. And even though I'm new to this role, I am not new to Jaunt, nor am I new to Fabiana. I started at Jaunt 12 years ago as the community manager and spent a lot of time in Fabiana attending the IAC meetings and events, and have come to really love the county and so glad to be able to present to you tonight. I want to start by thanking Hal Morgan, a Fabiana County resident who represents Fabiana County's interests on our board. He's been a wonderful asset to us, so thank you for appointing him.
And Ms. Davis, we still need one additional board member, correct, from Fabiana?
Yes, there is still one opening, and yes, so if you have people you would recommend, please do.
Yep.
Next slide, please. As you can imagine, as everyone's been talking about tonight, trying to operate during a pandemic has been quite a challenge. But I couldn't be any more prouder than of my staff. We never skipped a beat. Within 3 days, we were able to work remotely. Bring in the needed PPEs to help support our driving staff out on the road and put protocols in place to keep our staff and our passengers safe. As a result, we never stopped service. We responded according to demand and continued throughout the pandemic, and things now are actually ticking up, which is great. During this time, since April, we provided over 22,000 trips for essential workers, over 6,000 trips for people trying to access dialysis, 104 trips to food banks, and many of our staff actually volunteering to deliver food, and also staff providing free rides to the polls during the election. So I'm proud of this work and helping to keep communities connected in a time when connection couldn't matter so much. Next slide, please. It's an overview of our ridership. I have to say, I'm gonna ask my data analyst to look at that October number from 2019. That seems really odd, but if you look January to December, you'll see that, you know, things stayed pretty steady. We have three different kinds of services in Fabiana County. One is a commuter route that operates Monday through Friday, taking people to Charlottesville for work. We have what we call a link service, which is door-to-door transportation for people to go into Charlottesville to access usually medical trips or shopping or whatever they want, but traditionally it's been for medical trips. That's available on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then, of course, there's service within Fabiana County, and we call that the circulator, and that's available on Mondays and Fridays. Next slide, please. Coming ahead, you'll see in the next year, we will be rolling out a rebranding of the Jaunt services. And we're excited for our new look to show that we're keeping pace with the changes in transit and being very forward and future focused. I think that our riders will appreciate it. And along with that comes a really important redesign of our website, which will really improve access to the information that people need. I didn't include a slide about our request, but we are requesting flat funding, which will be just enough to maintain services. We are obviously, ridership this year has been below average, substantially because of the pandemic, but we expect it to return to normal as soon as the vaccination programs roll out and people start returning to all their normal activities. My last slide is just questions. Thank you very much.
Okay, do we have any questions?
Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you very much for everything you guys do.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a great evening.
You too. Alrighty, now with John being done, we are now finished with our nonprofit presentations. Mr. Weaver, would you like to get us into closed session, sir?
I will do my best. Mr. Chair, get the frog out of my throat. Mr. Chair, I move the Fluid Valley County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A. Point 6, investment of funds. Section 2.2-3711A.6, legal matters of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing investment of funds and legal matters.
Do I have a second? Got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluid Valley County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were lawfully identified in the motion of which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Do I have a second? Okay, got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
He's muted.
Mr. O'Brien, you're muted, bud. Okay, the chair votes aye. Can we do that as 4-0-1, or do I have to wait for Mr. O'Brien?
Mr. O'Brien's not voting for some reason.
He's muted.
Maybe he stepped away from his computer.
It may be that. But yes, you
can. Okay.
Four votes would suffice.
Okay, so we'll come out 4-0-1. We're coming out of closed session. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I now call to order the regular business meeting of the Fluid Valley County Board of Supervisors. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. We have an adoption of the agenda.
So made.
Got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien? Still not back?
Oh, there he is.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr. Dahl, go ahead, sir.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, got a few things to report here. So one, current COVID metrics that we get, you know, just kind of shows what our percent positivity has been over the last couple weeks. Back in January 4th, kind of the big surge from around the Christmas holiday, we were at around 14.7%. A week later, we went down to 11.7%. A week later, we're down to 7.7%. Now that but I don't want anyone to get the idea that we're, you know, everything's fantastic. You know, there's still lots of things that we need to do and be practicing. But again, you know, looking at some of our numbers over the past 3 weeks, they've been going down, you know, and they were pretty high before, and I think it was because a lot of people were gathering at that point. So that's really all I have to report on, just kind of some current county numbers, but just report. I haven't looked at the numbers today, but the numbers as of January 14th, it looks like, well, maybe this is from the 18th, but it looks like we're right over 1,000 cumulative cases at this point now. So a little bit about vaccination. We are getting calls. We are trying to do all we can about vaccination. And just during the board meeting before, I even got some not fantastic news about vaccines. Let me just kind of go a little bit about the vaccination distribution. Right now, they are pushing for phase 1A vaccination, which is primarily frontline healthcare workers. You know, social workers fall in that, EMTs, also first responders. Some of the sheriff's deputies also serve as first responders too. And then long-term care facility and staff, basically the envoy. So we are pushing right now to get phase 1A individuals, getting them vaccinated. We've been working with the sheriff's department, social services, trying to get something set up for next week so we can get them. In addition, there's been surveys going out about, you know, registering to get vaccinated. You know, phase 1B came out last week too, a little bit of a revision of that. And a lot of that, you know, includes a lot of essential frontline essential workers, residents 75 years and older, and then residents and staff at correctional facilities, homeless shelters, and migrant farm camps. And then you got phase 1C, which they say is planned for late spring, and that falls under all other essential workers, residents 65 to 74, and then residents 16 to 64 with underlying medical conditions. One thing I just wanted to bring to the board's attention is under 1B, they added a new provision recently, a new kind of classification that says officials needed to maintain continuity of government. So as I was reaching out with the health department about what that means, and basically the response I got was, you know, what kind of falls under that is elected officials, administrators, department heads, public works, public utilities, IT, and then forward-facing employees who provide direct services that can't be delivered remotely, and then also election officials. So to kind of get the ball rolling, we sent out a survey to staff about who wants to be vaccinated. And the way, kind of the stance we're taking, all Fluvanna County staff fall under 1B. And so we put out a survey to Fluvanna County staff. We sent it to the Board of Supervisors also. We sent it to the Electoral Board also, since they fall under election officials, about taking the survey. We sent out an email to the all county staff, which is about 133 employees. And as of noon today, we've had 75 responses, 71 yeses and 4 noes.
It's up to 81 now.
It's up to 81 now.
And
81.
You sent one to the Board of Supervisors.
You were in the big email that went out to all staff.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't notice
where it said elected officials.
So the board members, there is a survey that you can go on and all you have to do is put in your first and last name, your email address, and if you want it, information comes to the county, and we're trying to get a survey. We're trying to get the information to the health department so we can get individuals on the list to get vaccinated.
Right.
We've been working with collaboration with the Fluvanna County Public Schools about utilizing some school facilities for doing some of these events for employees, for their employees. Trying to hopefully utilize the high school annex gym maybe on a Wednesday. Like I said, it's been good discussions. A little bit of the frustrating information I just got today from Dr. Bonds regarding vaccines is the email came over that says, for the Blue Ridge Health District, they're only going to be getting about 3,000. It's just less than 3,000 vaccines a week for the next 4 weeks. And that's for the whole entire health district. And kind of looking at into comparison, I think it said, 105 per week for the whole state?
Yeah, 105,000 doses each week for the state.
Yeah, so the state's got, it's getting 105, and the Blue Ridge Health District's going to get about 3,000 of those for
week. We have 8 million detainees,
right? Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Booker?
Do we have like 8 million detainees, right?
Yeah, so again, the vaccine distribution's been a little frustrating, but we're trying to get staff. We're trying to get folks registered. We're trying to get people teed up so when it's time, we're ready and people are in the queue to get vaccinated.
So, Eric, I want to note this is and I didn't realize this at the time. This is actually an outdated photo. I didn't check that Blue Ridge Health District hadn't updated the photo, and I neglected to check it. So this is actually a little bit outdated information. Phase 1B is actually active now.
Yes.
Oh, and yeah. It's residents 65 yeah. and older are eligible now.
Well, here's the thing. Yes,
so that's a little bit out of date. I'm sorry.
Yes, what Kelly is saying, they're eligible right now, but we're still working on 1A.
Yes.
So
yes.
I mean, so.
However, 1B people are being vaccinated.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, is 1B teachers?
Yes.
Yes.
Because a lot of the teachers are calling around and getting or looking on the line and getting important
yes.
places.
Because they said the I did the survey online,
yep.
and I got an email saying that they had a computer glitch, and a lot of people's surveys were not even registered. I don't know whether mine was registered or not.
Sure.
So they're having a lot of problems.
They are, and we're from
Nathan heard.
Yeah.
From the county standpoint, we're trying to work. We're trying to get information to the public. You know, we're trying to send emails to churches so they can send out about, you know, getting information to the hotline. Later on under CARES stuff, I wanted to talk to the board about one other thought we had. But again, that's kind of what's happening in the world of vaccinations. So as we've done before, we're going to try and kind of get back to this. We have some new staff members that started recently. On social services, benefits program specialist, Alethea Kitt, she started January 4th. John Michael Whalen, a new planner GIS technician in the community development department, he started January 4th. And then we also have a new HR manager, Donna Snow. She started January 11th, and she's here with us this evening. Donna, wave to the board members. So like I said, she started, and we're hitting the ground running with taking care of things. So great addition to Fluvanna County staff. A little earlier, Chip Boyles kind of dropped a little hint of this. If you remember, for Smart Scale funding, the board wanted to go and submit three projects. One was Route 53 Turkey Sag, one was South Boston Road and Monticello Road. And then one was Troy Road and Route 250, a roundabout, as Chip alluded to earlier. The Fluvanna project for that roundabout, and the pictures in the bottom right-hand corner, was recommended for funding. So what that means is VDOT, and so out of this whole area, the whole Culpeper District, which includes, you know, Louisa, Fluvanna, Orange, Omro, and some others, there's only two projects that were recommended to move forward, and one was this project, the Troy Road and Route 250 roundabout, and another one in Orange. So again, you know, these are long-term, long-range projects. So the project is recommended for funding in 2025. It still has to go through some slight revisions of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. But it looks pretty good that we're going to see another roundabout coming to the county in the future. So,
and where was good. That? Where was it located?
At Troy Road. Troy Road and Route 250.
Right across that little business park.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yep. Also, we talked about this last board meeting. So we just need a little bit of Board of Supervisors guidance. We talked about a leadership retreat. So remember, normally we do retreats for 2 years. We do it in the years of an election. Last year we didn't do one. So, you know, we had indicated to the board that we think we need to do one, and it doesn't need to be a full day. You know, and like I said, we're only looking at focusing on priorities for just this, for the just this calendar year, because after this calendar year, we may have five of the same board members. We may have, you know, three board members are up for election. If we redistrict, we could have seven board members. So who knows what it is? But again, just for some proposed dates, and we're only talking to do maybe a 4 or 5 hour kind of, you know, small little retreat planning session.
Why wouldn't you wait until you have the full scale that you know you're going to have rather than right now?
Talking about the
No.
No. Well, the numbers. We don't have our numbers back.
No, we don't, and we don't know when we will have them. I meant to check today.
Are you
census numbers? Is what
census
you're talking
numbers.
About.
Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Are you saying what? Why should we not do the retreat? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because come next year, you might have three new board members.
Yeah, but then again, we will be doing a new retreat next year. We're just talking.
Okay.
We're talking just to finish. We're talking just
to make up for the one we missed.
We're talking less than a 1 year period, just to finish stuff out for this calendar year, and that's all we're talking about. So proposed dates would be next Wednesday, and we're trying to get this done before we get inundated in budget season. So one proposal is next Wednesday, January 27th, and we could do like a 4 p.m. to 8 or 9 p.m., or we could do a Saturday, and we looked at January 30th from like 9 a.m. until 1 or 2. Those were just some of the more recent dates, because after those dates, February 3rd, I present my budget, and then after that, it's budget meetings weekly.
Which one of those two votes?
Everybody's better for me.
Mr. Weaver?
Yep, that's all right. Anything.
Ms. Eager?
That's fine.
Mr. O'Brien?
This Saturday?
No, 30th. January 30th.
January 30th.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
Saturday the 30th
it is. And like I said, we're not, you know, as staff, we've already pinpointed some things that we think.
Yeah, just a couple of things. Redistricting is a big one we're going to talk about.
Yep.
Trying to figure out whether we're going to go with 5, 6, or 7.
Yeah, and we're not figuring out all the work right there. We're just, it's the discussion about some things that the board wants to achieve, you know, and work on this for the remainder of this calendar year.
What time and place?
So it'll place, I'm thinking we'll go ahead and do right here. We'll do 9 a.m. and we'll send something out to the board more formally, but Saturday, January 30th at 9 a.m. and we'll go till like 1 or 2 and we'll have some lunch for the board members.
It'll be on your calendar.
It'll be on your calendar.
I know you will remind.
We'll get it out to you soon. So thank you, board. And then again, just for some upcoming board of supervisors meetings, again, as I said, February 3rd at 4 p.m. we have a regular meeting, and then at 7 p.m. we have a 7 p.m. work session where my budget is, my budget proposal moves forward, and then revenue expenditure brief. February 10th, we have a work session at 7 p.m. for constitutional officers. Then February 17th, we have a budget work session at 4 for Fluvanna County Public Schools adopted budget. And then February 17th at 7 p.m., we have a regular meeting. And what else is there? I think that's it.
Monday the 25th.
Oh, yes. And next Monday, just remember, I think it's on everyone's calendars, we have budget briefs. The 2x2 budget briefs with some of the board members and myself and finance, just
yeah,
to kind of a little sneak preview,
huh?
A little budget sneak preview.
Yeah.
And I wish I could tell you what it looks like right now, but we're still working on it.
We're
going
to do the Morris room.
Yeah, we'll do in the Morris room. Yep.
What did you say it was? Morris room?
Yes, Morris room.
Okay.
But you have to be on the schedule, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
There can only be two.
Yes, only two. Only two, yes. Yes. We have it. We already have it scheduled for only two.
Like,
yep.
Already been sent out.
Yes, it's already been, the meeting's already set already.
Sure.
Yep. So.
Is that, I think I have a social services meeting at 3 o'clock. Weren't we meeting at 3?
1:30 to 3:30, 9.
Yeah, I don't.
1:30.
Okay, when they.
I have 3:30.
Mr. Weaver.
Mrs. Eager. Mrs. Eager.
Yeah, it was 1:30.
Mine is 20.
Everyone's Monday.
Monday, yeah.
26.
Yeah, it's.
Mine is Tuesday, the
26th. Yeah, mine's Monday.
From 3:30, right?
1:30 to 2:30.
On
3:30.
What day?
On Monday. I make sure.
So before we leave today, we will make sure everyone has their dates.
Okay.
Mr. Sheridan, that's all I have.
You sure?
Positive.
Okie doke. All righty. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. We'll now open the public comment. Anyone wish to address the board, please state your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Does anyone wish to speak at this time? Ms. Harris?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
This is Curtis Putnam, 16408 James Madison Highway, Palmyra, Virginia, 22963. I just wanted to say that I support the business park process in Fork Union. It's needed for Fork Union. It's needed for the county. And I think it's something very important to go ahead with.
All right. Is that it, Mr. Putnam?
Yes, that's it.
Thank you, sir. You have a great evening. Anyone else? All right, hearing none.
Mr. Chairman, let me make just one observation. Just for your information, the Planning Commission previously had its public comment sessions limited to 3 minutes. They amended their rules to provide to equate to yours, so it's 5 minutes. But if you hear anybody talking about that, the Commission changed its rules on that.
Okay.
The Commission now is the same as yours.
It's 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
The only school board still does 3 minutes. All right. Hearing none, I will now close the first round of public comment. All righty. There are no public hearings today, so we'll move forward to action matters. CRA Project Agreement Number 5, Fork Union Fire Training Building Design, Ms. Toller.
All right. We're going to go through this really fast because you guys just heard about this 2 weeks ago.
Yes, ma'am.
So this is the burn building. We're revisiting that. As you know, we had an RFP or IFB that went out. We came in almost at $1 million. That would have left over $500,000 for us to have come up with. So the burn building committee found another option from Harrisburg. They built their building for $650,000, significantly less than our plan was. So they would like to change this over and go with a design more similar to that to save the county money. Some pictures. So to date, we've already spent $44,860 on the project. Only $30,000 of that was covered by the grant. So if we decide to move forward with this new design, the $22,460 is going to have to be covered by the board, by the county. That won't be reimbursed through the grant. But we will get a new design and hopefully come in a whole lot less. So we need to decide if you want to move forward with that, and if so, where do you want that money to come out of? You have the options of it coming out of the unassigned fund balance or BOS contingency.
Yep.
So spend 22 to save 400.
Yes, at the last board meeting, the board said, let's move forward. Let's move forward. And so we have two motions for you. One is for the supplemental appropriation of $22,460. And the option for the board is to take it out of BOS contingency, or you could use unassigned fund balance. And BOS contingency was $76,000 currently.
Call for discussion.
Okay, are there any questions or discussion?
Yes, someone called me today about this, and they were wondering whether there's any length of life of that building.
That would be a question for one of the fire departments.
Do we have any of the chiefs on?
I don't think. My understanding is it's about 20 years. I think the one in Albemarle there has stopped using was about 22 years old, I believe.
Still good then, maybe, or? Okay.
So the first motion is the supplemental appropriation. The only thing you're choosing is Bureau's contingency or fund balance. And the second motion is to move forward with the engineering firm to design it.
All right, any other questions, comments? Thank you. Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve a supplemental appropriation of $22,460 from BO's contingency unassigned fund balance to the CIP project budget for the F&R burn building to increase the funds necessary for Project 3-5.
We have to pick one of those.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just Mr. O'Brien, I'm sorry, I probably should have said or. So it's either BOS contingency or unassigned fund balance.
I would say the contingency. Just go ahead and get that done.
BOS contingency. The CIP project, the F&R burn building, the funds necessary for
time. All right, do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next is B, Draper Aiden Project Agreement Number 8, for Kenyon Property Site Development, Ms. Toller, and Mr. Rothenbell.
Oh, no. We needed the second. Yes, one more motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
For the contract.
Oh, okay, for the contract. Do we have the second motion for the contract? I'm sorry.
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve Project Agreement Number 5 between Fluvanna County and Crabtree Routeball and Associates, Inc. to complete the Fort Union Fire Training Building design totaling $22,460 and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Ms. Eager and seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Sorry about that, folks. Now we'll move forward with Draper Aiden Project Agreement Number 8. Fork Union Property Site Development, Ms. Toller, and then Mr. Rothmill Economic Development.
I'm going to actually let Mr. Rothmill start.
Oh my goodness, I got to listen to him.
I'll try to be quick. So as we discussed last week, this is about the Fork Union property, 5743 James Madison Highway, Fork Union, Virginia. We're proposing to research the five parcels, 129A, 129, 130, 138, and 139. Those all total 133 acres, 0.793 according to our GIS. They do include the fire department, does include the community center, as well as the burn building site. So the reason why we're including all the parcels is that way we can plan with those items, you know, they're not siloed off.
Master plan the whole area.
Yes. That way we'll have one plan that'll show all these things. It also includes the two parcels that we're currently under contract for and the parcel that we purchased in 2019. You know, why should we invest in the Fork Union property? We have water at the site. It's 20,000 gallons per day of excess capacity currently with planned upgrades of 100,000 if we do the maintenance that we had already anticipated doing. There are a few sites in Virginia that are publicly controlled with 100 acres. And industrial land in Virginia, in Fluvanna is much cheaper than in other areas of the Commonwealth. Roads, you know, this is served by US 15 in Virginia. And Firefly Flyber is connected to the Fluvanna Community Center. So we're able to bring urban style fiber internet, you know, 10 gigabytes per second for business owners to this site, which is great. So this property, while it has its hurdles of being more secluded, for the right user, this would be something that would work very well. It would be difficult to sell this without completing these studies. Buyers, including Yay Wellness, would need the information that Tier 3 studies would provide, and that's what we're looking to do, is these Tier 3 studies. It helps reduce risk and fine-tune estimates for prospective purchasers. It's more attractive for prospective companies to be Tier 3, and in the future, we can get this developed to Tier 4 for quicker movement. And there could be outside money available, so grants and things like that, if the county decides to move to tier four in the future. We won't know the cost to move to Tier 4 until we complete Tier 3. Can't do them out of order. And this would give us a true business park that and inventory so that we can market it. Just a recap of the tier system, it goes from raw land to Tier 5. We are currently in Tier 2, and we're more marketable the closer we can get to 4 and 5. Really, the goal is if we can get to 4, that would be a prime spot. I don't recommend going to Tier 5 for most situations. Again, we did a study in 2019 as part of VDP site characterization of the entire state. They projected a 500,000 build-out. And then we already know about the utilities. This study in 2019 did not include the parcel that we bought in 2019, nor did it include the two parcels that we're under contract for. And it was strictly a preliminary review to let us know kind of the lay of the land and how to move forward. And the recommendations out of this were to move to Tier 3. Now, Mr. Weaver, you asked, what would a 100,000 square foot building bring into the county's projected revenue? These are extremely, extremely conservative estimates. So if we did if a building was $100 per square foot, that would be a $10 million building at 100,000 square feet. The 10 acres, using an assessment of $5,000 per acre, which again is probably extremely conservative considering it would be a business park, so it would be higher than that. And if they had $1 million worth of machinery and tools, and 100,000 of business personal property. That would come to a total of 98,000 per year per building.
Wow.
So even when discussing this with the commissioner, he used estimates that were a little bit higher than this and that he considered even those conservative, and that was upping the land assessment, upping the building a little bit. He thought even those were conservative, it would be 151,000. So you can see these numbers can change drastically just kind of based off of, I took the commissioner's conservative and I even cut those down to be extremely conservative at 100,000 per building. So if you had five buildings, that would be 500,000 in annual tax revenue.
On the low end.
On the low end. Now, that's of course, you have to get a 100,000 square foot building, so.
That's all it takes. I mean, to cover the expenses.
Yeah, it takes one. So this is the proposal from Chair Braden that you saw last week. The timeline for completion of these tasks is 3 to 5 months. The one item, the rezoning assistance, that's something that we probably will be able to do in-house. And if you have no questions for me, Mrs. Toller will go over the rest of the contract.
Any questions for Mr. Rothbelt?
No, I'd like to.
All right, Ms. Toller.
The only thing I was going to go over is when he just went over on the last slide.
Sorry.
Took your thunder, huh?
Yeah, he kind of did, but that's okay. So, yeah, it's $111,360. That will have to come out of unassigned fund balance, obviously, it's on the BOS contingency. And it would take 3 to 5 months, and that's what they're guaranteeing to have the studies back for us.
One business comes in, and that covers that in 1 year.
Yep, and again, we have two motions again. One motion for the supplemental appropriation, no decision. It's just unassigned fund balance, and then the second motion for the project agreement.
I'd like the privilege of making those motions, Mr. Chair. Ms.
Booker, the distinguished.
Oh, Donald has something.
Yeah, I was. You're talking about it being cheaper there at the land, and it is. But as any real estate person knows, it's location, location, and location. And if this were up around 250 or the interstate, I think you probably would have a lot more prospects. But I think this is fine, and I'm certainly going to approve it. But I just wanted to make that statement in the next 20 years when we consider another one, we can think about the location of it.
And then you have to think about, because of the location, buildings are going to come to that location, but they don't need to be running up and down 64 and so forth. Their business is going to be stable. They're going to be there. Their workers are coming. So businesses will come in to satisfy what their needs are. But I understand what you're saying, Don. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right. We're right. We're on the same track.
Yeah. Right.
Ms. Booker?
Okay.
Go ahead. Right.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplementary appropriation of $111,360 from the unassigned fund balance to the project budget to the project. Is anything behind the project?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Okay, let me move that.
Project budget for the Fork Union site development to increase the funds necessary for Project Agreement 8.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mrs. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Ms. Booker?
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve Project Agreement Number 8 between Savannah County and Draper Aiken to complete the Fork Union property site development totaling $111,360. And further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreements subject to approval as deformed by the county attorney.
Have a second?
Second.
Motion's made second. By Ms. Booker, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
No.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now move forward with C. A resolution amending temporary emergency personnel policy to address COVID-19 and CARES Act sick leave.
I can take this, and Donna, do you want to come up?
Ms. Snow's on her way.
Watch you.
Sure, she can come up. We'll kind of, like I said, we don't want to just, you know, immerse her right then and there, but if you have questions. So remember, you know, we kind of talked about this at the last meeting, you know, just the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, you know, which required certain sick and family leave benefits. It expired. It expired December 31st, 2020. And you know, again, the county is not required to do anything beyond that. But after talking to the board last week had some indication that they wanted to kind of continue it and extend it. You know, COVID's still happening. And this would just be kind of a one-time extension of those benefits, of that leave benefit through March 31st, 2021. And, you know, again, it's not starting fresh on January 1st. And, you know, if someone's already exhausted their leave in 2020, no additional's granted. I mean, and Donna, do you have anything you want to add to that regarding?
Basically, that's it.
Yeah, you know, we are, you know, all the time. We have, you know, we have staff going out. We have to, you know, some people have to quarantine because maybe there's a loved one that has, you know, that's positive, or maybe there's an inclination that someone may have been in contact with someone. We just need to, you know, this is something new for all of us, and we just want to make sure we're protecting staff and just providing some a little extra benefit for them. And like I said, there's no extra cost. We've already budgeted for their salary. The only thing you're not getting if they're out on additional leave is they're just out on leave, so.
All right, are there any questions from the board?
No.
All righty, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution amending temporary emergency personnel policy to address COVID-19 and CARES Act sick leave as presented.
Second.
Got a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
And next time, it's 100% on Donna.
Call me.
It's all her. She's learned from his sensei now. All righty. There are no appointments. There are no presentations. So we'll move forward with the consent agenda. D, minutes of January 6th, 2021. Ms. Solis?
Yes, I
E, accounts payable report for December 2020, Ms. Twisdale. F, Freedom of Information Act FOIA policy updates, Mr. Dahl. G, personnel policy updates, Mr. Dahl. And H, procurement policy updates, Mr. Dahl. Is there anything we want to pull?
Yes, on D, on tab D, and on page 111, we're talking about the vote nomination of the chair. And if we'll notice on that page, it says Weaver Cunningham nominated, and it says, then I said nay, that X should be moved over to I.
You are correct. You see, Kayla, right there.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I will correct that.
It's all right.
Good catch, though.
Thank you, Mr. Weaver.
Mm-hmm. And
anything else on the minutes?
Is anybody going to ask any questions on anything? If not, I'll make a motion.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
I thought it was turning to my tab.
Well,
go ahead, Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chair, I move the accounts payable and payroll will be ratified for December 2020 in the amount of $2,771,497. That's D through H.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Unfinished business, aye. Local allocations for federal CARES coronavirus relief funds. Mr. Dahl.
So just wanted to talk to the board about just one thing here. So about using COVID funds. So one, you know, there's lots of chattering in the community about what do we do? How do we get vaccinated? Where do we go? You know, not everyone has access to the computer, to the internet, to whatever. So one thing we were thinking about, you know, when we did before, we did a direct mailer that went out to all citizens to inform them of those regarding the COVID-wise app at the time. Well, the one thing we were thinking of is if we could push out information regarding, you know, what they need to do to register to get the vaccination. We thought that might be a good way to push it out to the community because there's, you know, like I said, we're getting emails from churches, you know, they've got, you know, elderly that don't have the access, that don't know. We get calls all the time. And so it's just, you know, one way to push out information to the community. So again, the cost to do that before when we did the COVID-wise one was around $4,000 and we could utilize CARES funds to do it. So just wanted to see what the board's thought was on that.
Yeah. And we
have, I don't think that's a bad idea. The full CARES Act money. I think that's
CARES Act money.
That'd be a good
use. It's feasible all at once.
The only thing that I would say is to make sure that the communication that we send out is complete, simple, but written so that people that may not have a high reading ability will understand it. Bullets or not a whole lot of words.
Yeah.
And somewhere to call if you don't understand it.
Well, the one thing is we want to make sure that
many can do that.
Oh, I can't do that.
We want to make sure that, you know, it's simple. Maybe, really the big thing is the hotline number.
Yes.
To make sure that people can call for the hotline number so they have it and they know where to call and they can get information. Nice.
So the computer illiterate people like me?
I'm not confirming or denying that.
I'm just looking out for
I will
me.
Totally throw me out.
You're looking out for everybody.
Mr. Dahl,
yes.
I suggest that you clearly put in the letter how to get on the fan mail. And I think that it's excellent, and a lot of people just don't know about it.
I think it should be a part of our website automatically.
Hey, guys.
What?
Ms. Booker made a suggestion is instead of having our normal picture on our website, maybe putting that as the first thing you see when you visit our website.
So, sometime in the next couple of weeks, right here, will be a circle that says fan mail.
Wonderful. Great.
I talked to our website people, and they're working on it right now.
Right.
But are you suggesting the big picture right there be fan mail?
Okay. Yeah, we'll put something clear on there so someone doesn't have to dig deep to find it.
Yeah, thank you for that. It just was not something I had thought of, so thank you for that.
Well, I think, were you talking about just fan mail, or were you talking about the vaccine stuff?
Fan mail.
Okay.
Well, now in the spotlight, there is the... The vaccine information is in the spotlight on the front page now.
Right.
So the mailer, I assume that was 5 head nods or 3 head nods or at least 3 head nods.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. We got 3 already here.
We'll bring a formal, but we're going to move forward so we can start getting the community registered, because it's going to take a little time to put this together. So that's all I have regarding that, Mr.
Okay. Is there any other unfinished business?
Yeah, I would like to, Mr. Chair, say that. With our nonprofits this afternoon, we had several people to make comments on our economic development gentleman about how well he's serving the community and how much they're enjoying working with him. So I'd like to give flowers for flowers. We all do a good job. It's just that that came out, and I thought that was very good. I appreciate that. The other thing is the letter that you got from the NAACP talking about the flyer that we at some of our places received from Scottsville and so forth. I think the NAACP had requested that the board make some kind of statement. Now, I know that we got something from Mr. Wells in the paper in the Flu Banner Review that said that we should not share, I mean, that you draw attention, I guess. Is that what you're trying to say, Mr. Wells?
Yes, I mean, maybe. I don't want to post that stuff on our website, because I don't want, it's got web addresses and addresses. Right. But basically, they're trying to get people $74.
Yeah.
The same ones that you saw the news were spread, I believe it was either Power Dan or Amelia account earlier this week. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just so we can hear you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry about that. Yeah, that was my intent in the press release. Like I said, I don't want to give more public information, or more, I don't want to give them the group more press than I think they deserve, which is not. I don't want their website out there where people can look on it. It's on their website. If you go to it, you can actually click to print those flyers off. So I was trying just to.
What are you talking about?
I don't want to give that group a dignity or view them.
There was white pride flyers that were in the Scottsville area.
I saw them.
Yeah. So that's why I'm going to put it out there. Yeah. We actually met with the NAACP 2 weeks ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Had a really good conversation with them via the Zoom meeting at the sheriff's office to get some lines of communication open and try to help stifle things like this. So we're trying to do the best we can. Unfortunately, ignorance is ignorance, so it's hard to
know. Dumb.
Yeah, and this is circulating more than you realize.
Yeah.
I think you're not going to stop.
Yeah, we only got one or two calls on them.
Right.
But I know a lot more that people didn't call. They got thrown around.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I know they went to some other account. Whether it's the same group or somebody else just saw them. That was my fear. If somebody saw one, get copycats and go online and try to print more out and then do the same super thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I didn't want to put the name and organization on the paper.
Right.
I think I remember reading, unfortunately, it's not illegal, it's just dumb.
No, it's
correct.
Technically,
it's just forced dumb. Stupid.
It's freedom of speech. But I think that with the NAACP, with their mission, and with the fact that a lot of things like these probably affect nobody in this room other than me, my family, and my people, my community. That as a board, we put together a resolution saying that we don't want a part of all of this. And I think sometimes people are looking to see, do we mean what we say? are we not, are we going to make a comment about this, or do we just want to just let whatever you all have it in? But you're not the Board of Supervisors, we're the Board of Supervisors. And so I think the Board of Supervisors, because that's what they, I think the letter asked me, didn't it?
It did. I don't have a copy.
Do you not draw more attention to it?
Well, they got all the attention. They've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, I only saw one.
People are spreading it already. People have already talked about it. So it's not any secret.
Yeah, it's on Facebook.
Yeah, it's on Facebook everywhere. And
I
don't know what I did with my podium. You got
the copy. I have a copy right here. Do you need a copy?
No, I have not.
Yeah, I mean, they were, the NAACP was asking for the board to issue a statement, and I can read the statement if the board wants.
Yeah.
So the statement that they were looking for is, last week, citizens of Pluvanna County woke up to discover messages of evil and hate distributed by one or more individuals under the shadow of night. The Pluvanna Board of Supervisors stands firmly alongside the Pluvanna County Sheriff's Office to denounce clearly and decisively, the bigotry contained in these messages, and to let those who attempt to sow seeds of hate and intimidation in Pluvanna know that we stand united against the vile rhetoric that they promote. In Pluvanna, there's more to it. That says, in Pluvanna, we are better than this. We stand to denounce hate, watch one another's back, and carry out our lives as neighbors in love and unity the Pluvanna way. And then they were looking for another piece underneath that say, if you have any information on the person or group responsible for distributing flyers in Pluvanna and neighboring jurisdictions, please contact the Pluvanna Sheriff at 434-589-8211. As we seek to eliminate hate speech and intimidation in Pluvanna County. So what I read was, I think, what they were, the statement that the NAACP was looking to come out from the board.
Well, I agree with Mrs. Booker that it's important for the board to state it. I also think that when we put that proclamation out, we said that we would put that out on the building itself. I just think, you know, when we talk about racial equality, when we talk about racism, it's just as powerful what you don't say as to what you do say. And I think we took great steps to say that we don't think this is okay, we don't believe in this stuff, and that as a community, we're gonna strive to work past that. And I just want to reaffirm those same statements, because we have seen what happens when you are sort of blind to, or you sort of ignore what is not said.
If we were to do something like this, would you want to add the last statement down there for everybody to call you?
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. We've got our email up there. When we talk to the OST, we're actually working on making a better link to share tips off of our Facebook page, our suggestion they made. We actually had a meeting this morning about it, and we're trying to figure out that we're not computer savvy as much as email, so we're trying to go ahead and make that work best possible. But certainly, you know, any information we get is information, you know, whether it's actionable or not, it's still, we'd like to know if we can figure out who's running around doing this type of stuff, whether we can charge them or not. If nothing else, I can get rid of someone's for littering.
Yeah.
It's not the best, but if that's all I can do, that's all I can do.
Right.
Ms. Eager?
Thank you for the quick response on that, too.
Ms. Eager, did you have any feelings about that?
No, I agree with Ms. Booker and Mr. O'Brien.
Yeah, I definitely think that any kind of talk like that is wrong. That's just my opinion. All right.
What we've done before, we either put out press releases, we put stuff on the county webpage, we put it on Facebook.
Whatever you all think is the appropriate.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Ms. Harris, press release, Facebook.
Yes. Press release, Facebook.
Website.
And I think we did a special fan mail.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's really
good message to have people. I was just going over there. It was just one word. I thought we could have put a word in somewhere to make it sound better.
And almost every time I post anything
on
our social
media,
it's picked up by the news.
Okay.
Without me even sending it.
Okay.
They pick it up right
away. You are fun.
So we will issue basically this statement here, unless we see any, you know, slight tweaks that we want.
To, yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. All right. Is there anything else? I just want to add on to what Ms. Booker said. You know, I thank Mr. Trotsmell, all the good work he's done. He owes a lot of it to the old baseball coach, but that's just me. Not that I ever say something. I say that all jokingly, but I thank you.
You deserve a lot of credit for what you do in the community, Mike.
No. I ain't worried about that. I'm talking to Mr. Rothmell now. I just want to give him, I figured that makes him smile, and I think it did behind his mask.
And so does Mr. Rothmell, absolutely.
Mr. Chair, could I just ask one thing too? This was brought up just a little bit earlier too, regarding the cigarette tax. We've discussed it before. Again, there's been some legislation that's being presented by Senator Hanger, talking about, you know, is there a requirement that counties or localities join a regional authority? VACO sent out some correspondence to I think, you know, VACO members, staff, wanting to know, you know, our county still kind of wanting to move forward with this, you know, and how are they wanting to move forward? Are they still wanting a regional authority? Is that kind of, well, I guess first, is the board still inclined to move forward with looking at the cigarette tax and wanting to implement a cigarette tax at some point?
Yes.
Okay.
So what is the bill then?
It's a requirement. It's a requirement that within a certain time, if a locality wants to implement the cigarette tax, they have to join this regional
authority. Well, if our region doesn't have but 8 or 9 counties in it, that's my only guess.
Yeah. maybe the argument against it is, well, let's just say Fluvanna County says, well, we don't want to join a regional authority. We want to do it all ourselves. Well, I don't necessarily know that we want to, but I think that's some of the pros and cons with other localities. But again, if we're still interested, and is the board kind of still thinking that a regional authority is the way to go?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Or if one decides not to do anything and everybody around them develops a regional board, does everybody come to that county to buy their cigarettes?
Yeah.
That's one of the things.
If they want to go that far to save 50 cents, then they
if they want to burn $3
right.
Again,
yeah.
Save 50 cents. All right.
Thank you, board.
Any other new business? I'm going to bring up one. Mr. Weaver, please don't smack me.
Okay.
Next time we get together, can y'all have some numbers possibly for possible looking at reinstating the raise that we took away from last year's budget? Because we said we would come back and look at it.
Well, I mean, as we're working on budget numbers right now, I mean, I can tell you what some of the numbers are. I mean, just like I said, they're not.
But well, like I said, this is just something. I mean, I don't know if it's not on the thing, so I don't know if we want to discuss it tonight. I brought it up the last time. I know, Mr. Weaver, like I said, I'm just trying not to make the blood pressure go up too much.
We're going into a new budget. What you want to do it in that budget. In other words, when I voted for what the rate was at that time. And if you'd added maybe another penny on, I'd have voted no. So it'd have been 4-1. So to me, it's going in the back door. And I just don't believe in that.
Well, I made a promise last year when we pulled it out. Because I think we had
I'm in with Mr. Weaver. I think we're in budget session right now, and we should pay attention to what's going to happen in the next budget cycle. And we can take it up then.
Well, like I said,
it's only months.
What was that?
It's only a matter of a few months before we're voting on that.
Yes, ma'am. Then, Joel, I'll make the same point I made before. We had agreed to it in the last budget cycle, but because of COVID, we pulled it out.
Like I said, some of them never got a raise in some counties. So, you can argue either way you want.
Yes, sir. But some counties have gone back and reinstated raises, either raises or bonuses.
Maybe their rate isn't as high as ours either.
Yes, sir. Like I said.
And everybody got their Christmas bonus.
Yes, sir. They sure did.
Well, I said I'd bring it up. Mr. O'Brien, do you want to just wait? Oh, you want to just wait, Ms. Booker? You don't want to look at it?
Oh, with the thing, I would put it in that next budget,
so
it would be
the raise. Okay, so the people have voted me down on it, so that's three of them that have said
we
no.
We just make sure that if they get a good 6 months, then we'll go back.
Yes, ma'am.
Mike, I didn't realize I was on mute, but I mean, I totally think that everybody, we're so close, and I think while it's valiant to push for it, I think it's also fair for the taxpayers to have the opportunity to vet it out in the discussions as we go on the budget.
Like I said.
So it's not that I disagree with the concept.
I will agree that, yes, we should do it in the next budget process, but you didn't. I don't know who's got potato chips or something, but they're making a lot of noise.
If they really hear me out.
I hear myself. No. But we did vet it out in the last budget, but because of COVID, we pulled it back because we thought everything revenue-wise was going to be way below. We found out now in the last two meetings that those two numbers are above. That's the only reason I wanted to talk about putting it back.
And that's a fair point. I agree with that. It's just a
I think
transparency is what everybody's aiming for there. It could be interpreted the wrong way.
I am being transparent, but that's fine. I'll leave it alone because y'all all said you didn't want to do it. But I also promised 9 months ago I would bring it back up.
We heard you.
All righty. No other new business. I will now move forward with, oh my God, I lost a piece of paper. Thank you. Ready to adjourn. No, second round of public comments. I lost a piece of paper.
You're shook out here.
I am. All right, anyway. I will now move forward with the second round of public comment. Anyone willing, wishing to address the board, please state your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Does anyone wish to speak at this time? None?
Nope.
All right, hearing none, I will now close the second round of public comment. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Got a motion by Mr. Weaver, second by Ms. Booker. Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Ms. O'Brien? Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Ms. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now adjourned.